They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shall Ya? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Sometimes I forget, but today I remembered. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio always, to my left, you've heard her voice before, because she hosts the Maximum Fun podcast, Switchblade Sisters. It's the one and only Sometimes It Snows in April. April Wolf, y'all.
Oh.
Yeah, oh, you heard. Yes. Oh. Oh. See?
Shout out to Prince.
See what I'm saying? He's going to be so happy. I'm so happy that that voice that y'all have heard is here. Because that is off. Oh, April, what's
I feel
good?
Like we should have started off introducing her because you're just like too excited. I guess I'll just pretend that Ricky's not freaked out. I'll say it really quick.
I like this. Let's follow April's lead. Let's introduce our guest first. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, she is a host of one of my favorite shows on Maximum Fun here, the Heat Rocks podcast. Oh, I love when we have ghosts. I love when we have ghosts. I love when we have ghosts. But I love when we have guests on that I've never met before because I do just kind of get that geek out, and I'm geeked out about meeting the one and only. She's got oodles and oodles and oodles of O's, Morgan Rhodes, y'all.
Hey. Glad to be here. So glad to be here. Thank y'all.
Thank you for being here, Morgan. Morgan, we always ask, we go around and we ask each other what's good to start the show off. So what's good with you, Morgan?
Oh, man, LeBron James is going to be a Los Angeles Laker.
That's good. We can air horn LeBron James.
Yeah.
We
can air horn LeBron.
That is good. One of my favorite bands, The Internet, has a new album forthcoming. Sid, The Kid, and them from Odd Future and from right here in LA. So that's what's good. Sports and music, baby.
Word. I believe I just listened to a song from The Internet today called Come Over.
Yes. The whole album makes you want to roller skate. So check that one out. Yes. Get to World on Wheels. Check that one out.
That's what's up. Now we will go back to our friend, April Wolf. April, what's good with you?
I have newly found, upon actually Jonah Ray's advice from Jonah Radio on Maximum Fun.
Friend of the show.
He told me to watch Detroiters. And because he was like, you're Michigander, you need to watch Detroiters. And my husband's from Detroit area. And wow, it's a great fucking show. Sam Richardson and Tim Robinson, both Detroit natives. They shoot in Detroit. They have so many kind of local in jokes that are layered where you can get them if you're from the area. And if you're not, then you can sail past those and still find it funny. But there's so many amazing things that they're talking about where they, you know, poke fun in a way that a native can about the quote-unquote greening of Detroit. You know, like all the stuff that like outsiders talk about where they're like, oh yeah, Detroit's like totally revitalized. And, you know, and it's just like the people who live in it or from it were just like, it's just a little different situation. And so they get to poke fun at that from the insider's perspective. And you never, ever get to see that side of Detroit, which is just, there's humor and there's sweetness and there's also kind of a meaning behind it. So yeah, Detroiters, everyone should be watching that show.
That's what's up. It's a very funny show. Tim Robinson, that's my guy. That's my boy.
Really?
He gave me one of my first gigs when I moved out to L.A.
He is so funny.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Was he in Chicago?
Yes, he was there. All? Yeah, I know him through, introduced it to Tim through another friend, Mark Ratterman, who's also a very funny performer, writer. They were in this, I guess it was improv and sketch group called Cook County Social Club. Because Cook County, that's a county in Chicago. That's what's up. And it was dope. They were great. Yeah. So shout out to Tim and all his success.
Detroiters.
Oh, and who is back in the building, y'all? The one and only. The one and only producer. Film festival programmer. Dope rhyme saya. Drea Clark, ladies and gentlemen.
It terrifies me to have you introduce me as that next to Morgan. Because I could be outschooled in so many ways.
Not at all.
That like me dropping small De La Soul knowledge is like, I'm just going to be over here. I know three albums total.
That's good.
Ricky, so what's good with me?
Yes. I got distracted by a really adorable dog that's in the
That's true. There's a straight up tailless corgi wandering amongst our feet. It's the cutest thing I've ever seen.
But we all want to know what's good with you, Ricky.
No,
we,
you don't know what's good with me yet.
Not yet. We haven't gotten to the stage.
April was so excited just to ask you, though. She's finally asking you. For me, I do have a really cool what's good, which is, I think you guys know this, but I help run a nonprofit called OMG Everywhere with a group of music video directors, and this is our 8th year. Mm. So some of the people I've mentioned before, so Hiro Murai from Atlanta and the Daniels who did Swiss Army Man and Isaac Ravishankari. Rava Shikara, he's going to kill me. And so a lot of music video people, we come together every year, everybody volunteers for free, and we put on a week-long music video summer camp for free in Boyle Heights at Pollution Studios for a bunch of kids from the After School All-Stars program this year. And we teach them filmmaking, and we bring in artists, and they make music videos for them, and it's insane. So, like, they get to learn cameras, lighting. We brought in, they all learned how to green screen, how to do stop motion, choreography. It's so cool and so insane, and they make the most absurdist short videos. Like, that's our way in is we start with them making these 10-second shorts that are the most nutball thing you'll ever see. And the kids love, like, any prop that ever has been donated has been used in every single video. So when you watch an OMG video, you're like, oh, there's the space helmet. Oh, there's the bloody severed leg that was in every single video this year, which was, like, the very hottest prop. So it was last week. We had our final screening at the Vista, and the videos will go up online in about a month or so. But if you go to omgeverywhere.org or just check out OMG Everywhere on Vimeo, you can see all of our previous ones. We've done them in L.A., New York, London, Oakland most years. I think that's where we've done them. Anyway, OMG, it's super great and really gets everyone checked back in with their imagination and inventiveness.
That's heartwarming.
Yeah. That's what's up, yeah.
So heartwarming.
A feel-good story. What's good is a feel-good story.
Well, it's more like we always say that the directors who do it are, like, more refreshed of why they... Do you know what I mean? It's less like, oh, people, like, doing things for the good of the children, which is, you know, kind of our main intent. But everybody's like, oh, man, that was so fun. We shot 12 things today, and I used a bloody stump in all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Hell OMG yeah. Everywhere.
Word.
Ricky.
Yes.
I would love to know what's good with you. Cha-cha, cha-cha.
I wasn't sure she was done. I couldn't find a natural segue in.
I like that this has now just turned into who will get it first. I mean, I feel like we should have
buzzers at some point.
Ooh, Casey, in the budget, buzzers? Thank you.
World star.
What's good with me is, I don't know if you all have noticed, you have because you mentioned it already, I have a little hairy friend who's going to be following me for a month. Chuck is in the building, yo. I'm house-sitting a dog for a month, this dope-ass little corgi, and we just kick it, and it's great. I picked him up last night and came home, and we watched NYPD Blue.
Oh, my God.
I'm on season 9 of NYPD Blue. Isai Morales just showed up in this bitch. Shout out to Isai Morales. Oh, just things are going well for me right now.
Good.
Things
are going well. Coming up, Ricky.
Oh, everything is coming up, Ricky. Isai and Chuck. You feel me?
I wish the visual of this dog is so good.
It's the best.
You'll have to put a picture of him up on the Facebook page.
Oh, I totally will. I totally will. I took a picture of him this morning next to my Chaka Khan album. He loves Chaka Khan.
Stop
Who
it.
Knew it? Who knew it?
Stop it.
All right. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about The Rock's new movie, Skyscraper. Skyscraper. I feel like I always need to say it like that when I see the title. We'll be discussing the 25th anniversary of Poetic Justice. And as always, we will have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. We're all going to read a news headline, and then any one of us will jump in with our take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? And I will start it off. Oh, a lost Stanley Kubrick script has been found, y'all. A professor at Wales Bangor University claims to have found a lost Stanley Kubrick script. Professor Nathan Abrams is a Kubrick scholar and says he found the script while researching his next Kubrick book. The screenplay is called Burning Secret and is kind of the, quote, inverse of Lolita, with the protagonist befriending a 10-year-old boy in order to seduce his married mother. It was written in 1956 after Kubrick's film The Killing was released. Is this important? Do you all care? How nervous did you get when you heard the words Lolita?
I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there that if you are a screenwriter, you write a lot of scripts. And that means that a good, 99% of them never get made. So, I mean, I'm sure that there's other ones out there that Kubrick has that are not made. But sometimes there's a reason they don't get made.
Yeah, totally.
I looked at the year for this. I was like, where in his career was this script found? Because I've definitely read other people's work that I'm super impressed by, and you read an early thing, particularly if it's an adaptation of another work, because that's a harder skill set to pick up on. It takes a little longer. Yeah, I don't know if anybody should be rushing out to make this. I do like the idea of sort of in an academic level, people checking out, because wouldn't it be nice to think of, oh, Stanley Kubrick's weaknesses. Look at this script. It totally falls apart in the second act, and we can analyze that rather than, oh, it's this howled tome.
Oh, I enjoy that. I think that more people should, I mean, I've learned everything that I learned about screenwriting by reading terrible scripts. Like 30 of them a week, just the worst, and you're like, oh, I see. Don't do that. You know?
Yeah. Stanley might be pissed, too. He might, you know, turn over in his grave and be like, I didn't even really want that made. Like,
yes.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
It's not like he's a perfectionist or anything.
No.
Right, exactly.
Not at all. Never
like, exactly. So he's in his grave like, whoever picked this up, this is not cool. Don't make this.
Yeah.
So be careful when you find stuff because it may have been lost for a reason.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
It's like a black sarcophagus that they're going to open up in Egypt.
We were
just like, no!
That's it.
Yeah. I assume he's still salty as hell at Spielberg for what he did with AI.
Oh,
AI,
yeah.
AI is
and
not a good
be.
Movie.
He should.
He should be.
He
absolutely.
Should
be.
Keep track.
Whoever finished Eyes Wide Shut, he probably wants to talk to that dude. Like, yo. April, do you want to take this next one?
Oh, sure. To all the Potterheads out there, I know that I am a Slytherin.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Remember?
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
I was told.
You basically speak Parseltongue.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means
at
all.
That's why I'm here.
So this is for all the Potterheads out there. This next story. For years now, author J.K. Rowling has claimed the character of head wizard Dumbledore is gay. It has never been mentioned in any actual Harry Potter properties, conveniently. And many fans were hoping it would be acknowledged in the new film Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. The new film features a young Dumbledore played by Jude Law. But according to Law, in a new piece by Entertainment Weekly, that ain't going to happen. We learn a little bit about his past in the beginning of this film, and characters and their relationships will unfold naturally, which I'm excited to reveal. But we're not going to reveal everything all at once. So everything meaning, like, the core sense of his romantic relationships, or I don't...
Here's the only reason why I would give more of a pass to this than... Because we've faced this before, right? Where we've talked about movies that are, like, implied that a character is gay.
Yes.
Or they're, like Sulu on Star Trek, who has like a picture of his husband but no other like gay life.
Yes, it's just kind of like a little Easter egg.
Yeah, which is weak sauce.
Mm-hmm.
But with Rowling, so what she said about Dumbledore, not to go deep, but the interesting thing is that Dumbledore and Grindelwald is the villain in this, and in the first Fantastic Beasts was played by Colin Farrell. Oh, I'm just going to spoil Fantastic Beasts. Go rent a DVD, you guys. And played by Colin Farrell is revealed to be Johnny Depp, but he's a villain. He's a bad guy. And she had said after all of the original Harry Potters were out that Dumbledore and Grindelwald had been lovers early in life and like the parting of them. So Dumbledore is the ultimate like good guy, whatever, old wizened wizard at the end of the Harry Potter books. So to me, there's a journey. I don't know if... It's that it's an acknowledged closetedness that he has to go through. I'm just interested because I do think that she pays attention to those things. And so I'm going to wait to whine till the next one. And if I don't think that it had been held back for like proper story character building reasons, then I'll bitch loudly. I'm going to hold my bitch.
No.
gonna keep my bitch right tucked in my armpit till then.
Now that's a great title of a mixtape. Hold on. That's gotta be you.
Oh hell yeah!
That's nice, real nice.
I'm also a Potterhead.
Yeah, you are.
So I actually agree with Drea. When I read this story, and I have heard J.K. Rowling mention in the past, or when she revealed that Dumbledore was gay, I my reaction was like, well, then I want to see it in the movie right away. I'm just used to her writing and how she does, and I was like, okay, well then this story is coming. So when I feel like I'm waiting for the next movie where now we're going to get into this backstory of what Dumbledore's gay life was like.
Did you just open it up with a hand job?
That sounds very on brand for the Harry Potter franchise.
I don't know. I don't watch them. So.
Just a quick little handy.
A little handy
to
Potter.
Open it up.
I mean, Johnny Depp.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Oh, my God. Handy Potter.
Do you think that Handy Potter is a, yes. a porn? Or, okay.
Yes. Let me stop you there. Yes. Oh. It's like Handy Potter and the Sorcerer's Bone.
Boom. Boom.
Drea.
I know. I should be better than this.
What type of show am I on?
I was going to say, Morgan, you're so cool that we're turning into children.
It's regressing my own cool. I'm like becoming uncooler by the moment.
No, because you got a mixtape coming out.
Yeah, that's right.
Morgan, do you want to read this last one here?
Sure. Bruce Willis says Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. During Bruce Willis's Comedy Central roast this past week, the actor took to the microphone to make a very controversial statement. He declared that his film Die Hard is in fact not a Christmas movie. Rather, he says it's a my mother's probably going to listen to this, so I'm not going to read that.
Sure.
Expletive deleted, Bruce Willis movie. And I don't care about that. Before you ask me, I don't care.
It's a preemptive. This is not important, nor do I care.
We have the least Morgan like segment.
That's true. Actually, all of these could have been tied back to Alonzo. They were
all,
they're
all
in honor
Alonzo.
Of Alonzo.
His spirit is
he's
with
not
us,
even here,
even when he's away. I believe our producer Casey O'Brien has something to say about this Bruce Willis roast. Casey,
yeah, hi guys here. Producer Casey here. So I have an official statement on this news story.
Ooh.
Wait, is this breaking news?
This is breaking news.
Oh, my God.
I have an official statement from the author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, Alonzo Duralde.
Oh.
Here it is.
So just days after Bruce Willis made the erroneous statement that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie, Fox Home Entertainment announced that at Comic-Con they would be selling a special Christmas in July edition of Die Hard, complete with four greeting cards. So, shut up, Bruce Willis. It's a Christmas movie. Deal with it. It's set on December 24th. The terrorists planned the heist because they knew there were going to be fewer cops around and fewer people in the building. McClane's wife's name is Holly. Gift wrap plays a key role in the denouement of the movie. And it's a story about a husband and wife coming back together at the holidays. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I'm tired of this argument. And I am el mero mero de Navidad, so what I say goes. Merry Christmas.
Oh, my God.
El mero mero de Navidad ding, ding, coming ding, ding. Through.
What a surprise. I love that he's just like, I need to record this.
Real quick. Excuse me.
Real quick.
Yeah. That was amazing.
That was fantastic. Shout out to my DJ, Denouement. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about Skyscraper, y'all.
Beginning this summer, you can listen to new episodes of Inside Pop every other week for an even deeper dive inside the world of pop culture.
Now, we're still bringing you our brilliant insight, always-on-the-nose opinions, and insidery inside information on the most interesting pop culture stories of the week.
And we'll also have interviews with the pop culture professionals who create the culture you crave.
For example, we'll speak to casting directors about how they find the right talent for the right role.
We'll talk to music supervisors about how they choose the music to create the right mood.
And we'll grill producers who'll discuss what exactly a producer does.
Oh man, Sean, how many times has someone said to you, oh, you're a producer, so what do you actually do?
So many times.
same here. So make sure to catch Inside Pop every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun to indulge your pop culture obsessions.
And to hear in-depth interviews from the movers and the shakers in TV, music, film, and more.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
Drea Clark.
Morgan Rhodes.
I'm April Wolf.
Today we are talking about that new The Rock joint, Skyscraper. And in a change of pace, I'm going to give a brief synopsis of the film. Yo, did you all see Skyscraper? Yo, oh, damn, don't, I just saw Skyscraper.
It Are you going to do this as a skit?
Yes. I just saw, actually, no, I'm just making this up as I go. I just saw Skyscraper, yo. It stars The Rock. He plays like this military dude who comes to stop this guy from, like, killing his family, but then the dude still kills his family in, like, a big explosion, and you're like, damn, The Rock is dead. But then, no, he's not. He's alive, and he gets taken to the ER, and Nev Campbell's there, and Nev is like, yo, I got you, dude. And then, like, cut to years later, and I think Nev Campbell gave The Rock, like, a robot leg, dude, because now The Rock got a robot leg, and he works in security? And then he like goes to like Asia. He's like working in Asia with old boy from Orange Is the New Black. Like they're boys, and you're like, oh damn, you're Liev Schreiber's brother. And he's like, yeah, I'm Pablo. And he's like, I'm Pablo Schreiber. I know that dude from Orange Is the New Black. So then he's like, yo, I work security at this building, and they want you to like make sure shit is more secure. Can you do that, The Rock? And The Rock is like, I got you, dude. He goes. Hooks up the building, and they're like, word, you're good to go. But then, like, at the building, we find out there's, like, nefarious shit going on, dude, like, nefarious. And there's, like, a guy who, like, owns the building and build the building, and he, like, gives The Rock a tour, and he's like, yo, check it out, I build hell of heaven. And you're like, whoa, you're not God, dude. You can't just say that shit. Bad things are gonna happen to you. Lo and behold, bad things happen, dude. Turns out terrorists show up, and... they want the building and or like what's in the building, and then you know, The Rock and his family, and The Rock's family is trapped inside the building, and they gotta get the fuck out of there. And The Rock is like, yo, I've been accused of a crime, but I gotta go find my family in there. And he gets in there, and then shit, dude, it gets even crazier after that.
I'm wondering why this podcast isn't just Ricky giving synopses of movies. Because he's never given a synopsis
like,
on the show before.
Have you ever asked a good drunk friend about the first movie they ever saw? Because that's what we just experienced. At first I was like, "Is he's going to go scene by scene. I mean, I'm for it. I am absolutely for it.
I feel like that was the first 20 minutes of that movie, though.
That was amazing.
That was the first 20 minutes of that movie. And then after that,
And then stuff happened.
Yeah,
things happened. Yeah,
I do like that you did not mention that it was in Hong Kong or that the building was... that they made so many pains to tell us that it's the largest building that's ever been made, that we got, like, graphs and pie charts of how much bigger it was than existing structures.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the filmmakers are like, don't you remember my pie chart, man? Like, yo, shout out to my pie chart.
We had a whole department for this pie chart. And this, put this in the movie, please. What did we all think of Skyscraper?
You mean Firescraper?
Come on now.
Oh, I thought it was like, a diehard, diehard skyscraper. It's like, it's diehard with fire and The Rock.
Yeah.
Dyescraper?
Dyescraper.
I'll take it. Firescraper. Mm-hmm. Die Rock Hard.
Die Rock Hard?
That's from producer Casey, and I resent that I just read that. Resent it.
You took the bait.
I did take the bait. I actually took the bait of this film, too. I was like, I don't know if I would have seen this in the theater normally if I wasn't scheduled to sit in a room with friends in the evening and talk about it on microphone. But it was truly one of those that I was like, oh, it's just a satisfying summer movie. I think The Rock is so inherently likable that charm really does a lot of heavy lifting, pardon the pun. And I loved Neve Campbell. I've loved her since Scream. I really liked seeing her in this, and I really liked the pains that in something that is such a traditional, like, literally strong man climbing a building, he does three different full body lifts from, like, a one arm hang. And I was like, okay. Like, you're going to monkey bar your life? No, don't buy it. Everything else I buy. All the physics, the fire, sure. But those three full body, no way. But I liked that for something that had such a, like, macho, shredded lead character, that his wife was pulled upon to do inventive things, brave things, physical things. And there's a female villain that I really liked. There's who I like to imagine that I look like and exude a lot of the same qualities as that athletic, like, Chinese assassin. That's kind of what I hope I'm putting out in the world. I might be doing it wrong. But, yeah, I thought there was a nice thoughtfulness to it. And it was like one of those cha-cha, cha-cha, like a Rube Goldberg. Like, things clicked into place when I wanted them to. Mm. And I didn't hate it for it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
No. Hell no. If The Rock wasn't fine, I wouldn't have stayed as long as I did. So that was helpful.
Yeah.
It does help.
Yeah. It does. He's easy on the eyes.
Yeah. I mean, it just, if he wasn't fine, I would have killed The Rock, because there were so many times he should have been dead, like 35 different times.
Yeah. At least.
At least. The little propeller thing. You're not dead right now?
The thing where he's timing, like, double Dutch style, when to jump across this turbine that's, like, 800 floors up.
Who was an outside turbine? How many birds are they killing just millions a day?
Yeah.
They're just like, come on in. Come on in. Just slice and dice all these birds. You know, like, who would do that?
There's so many unnecessary challenges in this movie. There should have been a double Dutch room that he has to go into.
I know.
And like, whoa, how do I get through this? Yeah.
It was in a draft.
Terrible. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I mean, if nothing else comes out of this film, duct tape stock has to go way up. Right? Because that was used religiously throughout. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, again, not to just focus on the physical, but it did help me that he was fine. That helped me to get through it. I like Neve Campbell's role. I like that she was just a mother. I like that she wasn't really that glam. And I like that. And I took one of my friends, she's really, really young. So when Neve Campbell came on, I was like, oh, yeah, she was in Party of Five. And my friend was like, what is that?
Oh,
I was like, okay, all right, yeah. I was like, Scream, and she was like, oh, okay. So we were able to sort of bond there. But,
The Craft.
Oh. Yeah. She's really young. She's really young. So, but outside of that, it was just hard. I feel you on the villainess, though. But I just think, like, in every film, like, if you're a villain, do you have to have that sharp bob and that leather fit? You know,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I looked at that and was like, is it that I'm not getting the sharp bob? Is that where I'm going?
That's
on
it. That's the issue.
Are gonna change
that's
for
the one
you.
Thing keeping me from being that woman.
I think the villains weren't developed much. And that's my, I mean, being someone who loves action movies, this is something that is a peeve of mine for most action films that aren't written by Shane Black. He seems to have really good.
Yeah.
I think that, the villains just, they don't stand out as, like, interesting, or they don't have, like, personalities. They're just like, we're evil and we do bad things. And this is, you know, it's supposed to be like a movie that is, like, fun but has a kind of seriousness about it. And, you know, that's what you're looking for with this, you know, summer blockbuster, which is why you're like, why aren't there more kind of one-liners, more funny things that people are saying, you know, some kind of personality. And, you know, that's something that characters under duress do, is they crack jokes to try to get through. And you get a little bit of that, but there could have been, I mean, a lot of these movies, they'll have someone, I think the structure of this film is really, really well done, but you would normally have someone come in and do punch-ups on it and, you know, try to make, like, the jokes soar or sing or, like, have some kind of, like, punchline somewhere.
Mm-hmm. They have some snap to them.
And you'd think the director of Dodgeball would have done that. Yeah.
Is that what he did before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's, I mean, like, the callbacks, I guarantee you there was a scene where he was doing double Dutch with his twins, and then they cut it out. I absolutely saw that, because there is like a thing, you know, he's counting down to get through the turbines, and I'm just like, yes, there are so many callbacks of like things that are set up in that first act that they return to that I bet that they realized with that they were like, oh shit, that's like one too many, like this is getting really annoying. And so instead of having jokes, they just had constant callbacks, which gets tiresome sometimes.
Yeah. For as much of a clear homage, and it's they love Die Hard, and like I love Die Hard.
Sure.
I love Die Hard. When I moved here, one of the first things I did was take me to Nakatomi Tower. I want to see it.
Oh my God, you totally did.
Yeah,
didn't you?
Goddamn right,
it's
I
not
did.
Even a
goddamn
joke.
Right, no, and it's not a joke. No. This is not hyperbole.
I'm always like,
facts,
oh my God, I hope I don't have to go near Nakatomi Tower. It's so far away.
Oh, it's great. It's beautiful. It's as beautiful as you think it is, y'all.
You had at least 3 different voicemails in your life that said, "Leave a message, yippee-ki-yay." I have a question, a statement, and actually kind of alluding back to your friend when you mentioned Party of Five being like, blink, blink. You saying Die Hard, that's another thing. The people who are watching films currently in like the target demographic have not seen the motion picture Die Hard.
Sure.
To them, it's not like as fully either derivative or homage or any of those things, which is, again, a sad reality. Like, there's a million things we could go back. Like, you're not familiar with the femme fatale? You don't even know the archetypes that's built. You need that foundation. Put some grains under your junk food. But, like, people don't always have that. So you are a film lover, and you have that film memorized. Like, you know this genre really well. You probably know it better than me. So it makes sense that your, like, kickback from it would be, this can be done.
Do you know how many times I wanted to yell, nah, at the theater watching this? When he was, like, putting, like, the duct tape around his arm, I mean, that's the same. He, like, pulls, like, this, like, glass out of his shoulder and is pulling, like, the duct
tape.
That
was so whack. That was terrible.
That was terrible.
That was terrible.
But you know what that works in Die Hard, when Bruce Willis is taking it out of his feet because he, like, looks like a piece of shit. Wait, and you're like, this dude ain't gonna make it.
Yeah, because I think the thing that I took away from it is you want to root for The Rock because he's a good guy, but he's not cool. Bruce,
yes.
We keep talking about cool in here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what bothered me about The Rock in here. He was a hero and stuff, but he wasn't cool. Mm. He was a good guy, but he wasn't cool. And I thought Bruce Willis in Die Hard was sort of, you know, not a great guy necessarily. Somebody probably, you know, might kick your ass outside, but also he was cool. So you rooted for him because he wasn't necessarily a great guy,
yeah,
but he was a cool guy.
How are we all feeling?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, how are we all feeling about, outside of The Rock in this movie, about The Rock in general? Where are we at with The Rock?
Well, I was just
I told you
say,
how I felt
yeah.
when we started the segment.
But as far as like movie choices, if The Rock has a movie coming out in 6 months, you're all in? You're going to go see that movie?
Did you see Rampage?
No.
Ricky's favorite film.
It was not my
I'm
favorite
sorry,
film.
I didn't see
No, that's Baywatch.
I didn't see Rampage. I'm
did
not
you see
lie.
Baywatch?
No, I didn't see
Baywatch.
See,
he's fine,
either.
But it's not enough to like get all the butts in seats. My thing with The Rock that I find interesting, because I do, he's so attractive and so charismatic, and he's just charm and star power. But there's interesting similarities, largely due to the physicality of Arnold Schwarzenegger when he started, and in the uncoolness kind of comes into that. And like a lot of Rock's films, he's never sexualized for someone who's like, you were like, yes, I'm thirsty, and I'm right standing next to you in that line. So like we can look at it and be like, yes, of course, this is a man that many are attracted to and many whatever. But in his films, if you look at the Fast and the Furious, he's the only one not like surrounded by women in bikinis or leering
sure.
at a coworker.
Sure.
He's often like the dorky dad. And there's something about that Arnold was similar to, in that he was not sexualized for a long time at the beginning of his career. Arnold was always paired with women of color in a way that was kind of, I mean, you could do a deep dive on like the weird and worrying things that was kind of earmarking.
Yeah.
And I think The Rock has been a similar way of, oh, there's a level of threat of the, because Arnold's also foreign, like of the otherness and the huge body and reversing this. And a lot of his film choices have fed into, I think, what people find most comfortable, most bankable, like the Kindergarten Cop of The Rock.
Yeah.
I think he's making too many comfortable choices, and he's at the point, The Rock, I'm saying, and he's at the point where he is our Schwarzenegger. So start finding those directors that Schwarzenegger would get together with. Find, you know, The Rock. Make a movie with David Fincher. The Rock. Make a movie with... Who's a huge action director right now?
I'm gonna
the
tell
Rock.
You.
Find them and make a movie with them. Because, like, you are the guy who does everything. I no longer need to see The Rock with the Wholesome Family. I don't need to see I like seeing The Rock when he's making fun of himself. I like seeing The Rock when he's when there's just like this other layer that we weren't expecting in a Rock movie.
Like
when
it's texture. Just
I've said this before, but I kind of feel like The Rock has never truly been comfortable with himself. Which I think you see in like a lot of the statements that he's been talking about, his ongoing depression, his past, and it's just like seems like maybe he can like power through it, you know. And I think when you have like an actor who's like not totally in touch with themselves and who they are, I don't know that they're going to make the right decisions of like which movies, which characters, because they want to exude a persona. I get that a lot with like Tom Cruise too, where you're just like some of the choices that he's making is just like, no, this is what I want to be. Not who you are.
You know,
and then it's just sometimes it's not a good match. Sometimes it is. And that's why I'm just like, yeah, he's fucking amazing in Magnolia.
Exactly.
Right.
Absolutely. When he goes outside the box.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's just like, well, you know, maybe this is a time where The Rock is opening up in you know, personal. I hate that I know things about people's personal lives, but that's just where we are right now. And, you know, perhaps he's going to make some quote unquote acting choices as opposed to just like whatever, you know, action movie comes along.
That would be
great.
We'll see. That would be great. Well, I feel like we get an idea of what we all thought of this movie, but let's go around. April, Morgan, Drea, Skyscraper, screen it, stream it, or skip it. I'll start with what we... I know what you're going to say, girl.
No, you don't.
Say that shit.
Stream it.
Ooh.
I think, like I said, I wouldn't have necessarily gone to this. I found it satisfying, but I don't think it's a, rush out and get it while it's hot. I think this is something, if you are looking for a satisfying movie experience and you don't have a real diehard hang up. Yes, that felt good. Yes, this is a stream it for me. I think this is something that would be like, oh, nice. That all came together. That was a movie.
You know what? And even though it wasn't my favorite movie, I would say go out and see it. I think action films are meant to be seen in the theater and not at home. I'd be really mad if I didn't have anything to do and that was the only thing that was on. I'd be like, nah, son. I'd watch this at home. But I think the experience of watching it at the theater, I think action movies are for that. But make sure you take a homegirl that's actually seen Party of Five so she knows the actresses in it.
That's the prerequisite. It's just like, have you seen Party of Five?
That's it. That's
can
it.
You enjoy this?
That's it. That's it.
I'm with Morgan on this. I think that people should screen it. Just because it is an action movie and there's big sounds and there's lots of flames and, you know, maybe you will have had two Budweisers like I did before I saw it, which put me in a mood to just be like, yeah, I don't know, hang off a building. Let's see what happens. And, you know, it's a decent movie.
I desperately hope that's what you said out loud in the theater. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're on that building.
Let's see. Let's see what happens.
Oh. I hear you. Before I give my negative review, I'll say...
Oh, we're on the edge of our seats.
I'll say a positive thing about this movie. Love seeing Neve Campbell in it.
Yes.
I haven't seen her in a minute. And when she showed up, I was like, oh, damn, Neve Campbell.
I like what Morgan was saying this earlier, was just like, I like... just her and like she doesn't look glammed up.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that where I'm like, I look at them and I'm like, I could actually see them somehow being a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
You know, like, hey, maybe they met in the military or something like that. Like,
they
I can
met when she put,
see that
took
happen.
His leg off.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You see when they met.
Exactly.
Yeah. We got their meet cute. Their bloody pass out meet cute.
Oh, God.
Well, she was smart. That was a great, great part where I don't know, the feds were trying to talk over her in a different language, and she was like, oh, no, I understand that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I understand all of what you're saying.
Yeah.
So.
Shout out to this, how much of a multilingual film this movie is as well. See, I got positive things to say.
Well, I mean, it was released in Hong Kong, too, and that's like, you got to have that.
That's a market, y'all.
One more thing for Neve Campbell, too, is that her character never talks down to her husband because he has a disability, which is just like, she's not like, oh, baby, I feel so sympathy for you. She's just like, I don't know. get your shit together and go to work.
But I will say, skip this movie. Skip this movie, y'all. Watch Die Hard, or I don't know.
Watch your favorite Christmas movie.
Watch a better rock movie. Do that instead. I'm sorry. I don't mean to hate on The Rock. The Rock, I love you. You're a friend of the show. The Rock's a friend of the show.
Huge friend
of the show, and I love you, The Rock. No disrespect. This isn't like anything personal. I just want you to do better, yo. Make a movie with David Fincher. That gets me very hyped. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking Poetic Justice.
Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone.
And I'm Adam Felber.
Adam, I haven't gotten one thing done today.
Well, let me see your to-do list. Ah, yeah. Well, here. Make 30-second promo for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, so at least you're getting that done.
Score!
Except you haven't said what the show's about.
We're like a comedy field guide to life, starring me and you. I give useful advice, and we have real experts to talk about things like how to keep a friend or what to do when you encounter a bear.
Bully for you, but you haven't said where people can find the show.
Oh, MaximumFun.org or wherever you find your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Morgan Rhodes.
Drea Clark.
25 years ago, John Singleton's Poetic Justice was released. Now, in honor of the anniversary of this film, we have music supervisor Morgan Rhodes on to talk a little bit about it. To start things off, Morgan, why don't you tell everyone what Poetic Justice is about and why it's an important movie to celebrate, please?
It's an important movie to celebrate because it is a part of the trilogy of John Singleton projects. He was a young, hot director at the time. This came after Boys in the Hood and before Higher Learning, which was 1995. It was significant because he was a film school graduate getting his shot. There's a lot to love about this movie. The score is Stanley Clark, so it's very jazzy. Shout out to him.
Oh, that Stanley Clark song is so great.
Incredible.
It's great.
Of course, you've got Tupac and Janet Jackson, who play sort of love interests, navigating life and youth in South Central. It shows the great West Adams and South Central Los Angeles, and I grew up in South Central, so it had some resonance with me. It was also important because at the time, there were so many black actors and actresses who otherwise didn't have roles, and John Singleton put everybody in there, which is so... that's so black to do. You put every possible person. Your cousin's an actress? Okay, your cousin's going to be in this movie. And I think it's important for people that, when we talk about, holding space for actors of color to have, to have visibility and to be included and stuff like this, it's important to remember that 25 years ago there was a director that was doing that. And some of the reason why we're asking for that is because it should be other directors besides black directors that put a whole bunch of black people in a film. Mm-hmm. And it's significant because this was 1993. Tupac would die 3 years later. Janet Jackson was a huge star then. I mean, her fifth album came out that year, Janet, which had tons of heat, fire, if.
I was going to say,
anytime, any place.
My personal religion when this movie came out was trying to learn the choreography from If, from the video.
Oh. I still know it. That's
all I did with my free time.
That's it. And this was, it was her first... this album was Janet, and it was her first album. She had signed that big contract with Virgin, and it was between Rhythm Nation 1814 and Velvet Rope. So she was, she was doing big things. And mm-hmm. it also, there are problematic parts, in the film, but it really talks about black youth growing up in South Central and these challenges and gang violence and so many of the touchstones of black culture, the whole scenes in the beauty shop, which is where you get wisdom is imparted and you get roasted, right? And things happen and stuff. So it's just we were talking before the show started that we cannot believe that was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
That, I can't believe that was 25 years ago.
Well, there's talking about bringing people in. The other thing I remember about this was, so she plays a poet. Which, by the way, I love the title of this movie. I don't know why, because her name is Justice.
Her name is Justice.
And I just, oh my God, she's so beautiful.
That hat
and
that
her
she
hair
wears.
And yeah. that slouchy cap. But so she's a poet, and all the poetry is by Maya Angelou,
right.
which is like incredible. The yeah. ability, do you know what I mean? Of like, you're talking about bringing in that cast. It's like, oh no, here's a whole worldview you're going to get in right. this film on this like art in these different levels.
And then Maya Angelou's in the film too. So yeah, not, yeah. not for nothing. They just yeah. put, they you know, they throw her in there too. They're like, come on.
They're not just bringing her out here to sing the hook.
That's right. yeah. That's right. Hey, was, shout out to Missy Elliott.
Right. Yes. I was really impressed at how John Singleton is just swinging for the fences on this movie. Having poetry by Maya Angelou, casting Janet Jackson in her first role.
Sure.
The movie starts off in like this fake movie within a movie, Deadly Diva. They're at the drive-in.
The drive-in.
Yeah. And I mean, thinking back to when, you know, you see Boys in the Hood and you see this next movie's coming out and it's got Tupac in it and Janet Jackson, you're not expecting a movie to start off with kind of like this, I don't know, magical kind of like realism of a movie within a movie. I mean, and even that movie that they're watching is very stylized. It's Billy Zane and what's my girl's name? Lori Petty.
Yeah.
And like everything is like shot like in canted angles and like crazy lighting. And I'm like, this is the movie that Q-Tip takes Janet Jackson to go see.
Right.
And also Q-Tip is in this movie.
Right. And they start off the movie with the Isley Brothers Between the Sheets yeah. and then Vanita Applebaum. And
I felt like John Singleton, like, was like, I'm not taking no notes from anybody on this movie. This is going to be my vision 100%. And it's really, I mean, there's problems that the movie is a little problematic.
Sure.
Yeah. What were some of the things that you found problematic in the movie?
I think before Tupac has this realization that, you know, that he likes Janet, there's a whole bunch of like, you know, you're stuck up, you're this, you're that, you're this, you're that. There's a whole bunch of qualifying these different type of black women, you know. And then you've got Guy Tori. Is it Guy Tori or Joe Tori?
Joe Tori.
Chicago.
And his relationship with Regina King is wrought with, you know, the B word throwing back and forth. So that was a little bit tough. But that's also reality mm-hmm. of youth and them going back and forth and the domestic situation that happened between Regina and her man Chicago in the back of the truck. But I liked it that there was pointed social commentary in there. What was going back and forth in the post office? Those things. It's almost a shock to the system to look at some of the landscape because this is South Central before it was gentrified, so that it announces itself as this has always been a predominantly African American neighborhood, and then just some of the violence. But that was also South Central at the time. I mean, mm-hmm. it was coming off of Boys in the Hood, so this was the high point of gang violence and the aftermath of the crack epidemic. So it was on brand. Just some of that stuff was tough.
Yeah,
tough to see now. Had total resonance then, but then stepping away from it, I was like, well, damn, you know. That said, I think it was just an incredible movie. I mean, whose name is actually really Justice? And then her license plate was personalized. It said Justice. She had a Honda CRX.
She was so cool.
Some things didn't make sense because I was like, you on a budget, but you got this Louis Vuitton luggage. I hate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like to think she got that in Santiali.
She might.
Yeah. It was like of W instead of
exactly.
a V.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. LV's not completely on point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I just like assumed that, you know? It's yeah. just like you're trying to put on airs. You want to like look like you got the best, but maybe
sure.
you don't.
Sure.
And I just really love that, like, Janet Jackson at this time had so many white fans, mm-hmm. and putting her in the movie with all black actors predominantly is just, I think that was so nice for to kind of force so many young white suburbanites to go and see the movie and actually be like, ah, oh, okay. Like, this is accessible to me. I can see this. I can feel the story. This is for me too in some way.
Sure.
You just said young white suburbanite and I was like, you rang?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly...
It was like me and my sister yeah. went and we were just like, yeah, we're going to see Tupac and Janet in this
yes.
movie because we're going to see Tupac and Janet. Yeah.
We're there. And I had the same thing, and it's interesting because some of the scenes you're talking about, like with the, like them calling Tupac especially says bitch as well as Chicago does. And there's a whole conversation that I remember, and it was one of those nice little, like, world expanding. Like, you aren't really aware of it at the time, but I remember she has this conversation, and it's when they're in the truck. So they're out of town, and there's something nice about them. It's like a neutral spot. They're removed from their normal surroundings. They're stuck talking to each other. They're just getting to know each other. And it's sort of lyrics, but he's definitely saying, like, bitch. Like, there's just all this negativity.
Yeah. I thought he was saying, I need to ask you this question, Morgan. I thought he was doing Apache's Gangsta Bitch.
He was doing Apache's.
Okay, all right.
He was doing
But
that.
He's kind of like adding his own little twist to it as well.
But he's doing little pokes at her. But she blows up at him about calling her a bitch. And she very pointedly said, and I was like, oh, this is outside of my realm, but she very much to his face is like, I'm a black woman.
Don't call me a bitch.
You don't get to call me a bitch. You don't know. And her doing that, like I said, it was the small thing of my head was like, oh, like, do you know what I mean? There's just a little opening there of, oh, what a nice thing. Like, I've admired her as a musician for so long.
Sure.
And I live in Minnesota. I don't have friends in South Central.
Sure.
I don't know. So there was this nice pocket of learning that came that I loved that as much as those words factored in, I really liked how both Janet's character and Regina's character responded to how they were, like, treated and spoken to.
Right, and really stuck up for each other and stuck up for women. And then you have, you know, there's a whole worldview there. You have when they go to the family reunion, which is very typical, that you can expect a black reunion. You're going to see the electric slide. You're going to see kids what we call wrestling and tussling. For your white listeners, that means just rolling around in the grass. I don't know if I have to break that down. I don't know what your demographic is, but wrestling and tussling is what we call it. And then just the acceptance. And of course, when they go to the African marketplace, they've got, you know, music. They've got the last poets performing N-Words, Scared of Revolution. So you have a lot in there. It's very rich. So there is a lot of wisdom being imparted over generations, which I really like. I think it does have that film motif that we see all the time of you getting in a vehicle to get to a better life. You know, in this case, it's a post office truck, which is wild. You know, it's like, yo, no one ever called the police and said that you took the truck. And then they get to Oakland and to imagine the 25 years later, Oakland would become the setting for so many films, especially this year. So.
Yeah. Well, shout out to you for coming here and talking to us about poetic justice.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. When we're done recording, I have Stanley Clark questions for you. Because the song that Stanley Clark song that's used in Poetic Justice, and I believe he uses it in Boys in the Hood as well, is like...
And the major product placement that Janet's like, yo, I'm in this, and in credits is going to be again.
It was a huge
hit for
so
Janet.
Yeah. Didn't she get like an Oscar? Wasn't that nominated for Best Song?
Yeah.
For the Academy Award?
Yeah.
I remember the video of that because it was like a Dear Diary. Like, you guys, I've always watched a lot of music videos, but I just remember the music video for Again was like her writing in a diary the whole time.
Oh, yeah. That's right. She was nominated for the Oscar for that
Yes.
time?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, my sister and I were really into that song.
Yes. When you weren't working on your IF video.
Oh, that's what's up, yo. That's what's up. We are almost going to leave you all, but it is time for our staff picks. Every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out. Any movie at all, April, I'm looking at you, yo.
I have mine prepared.
Nice.
Mine is a 2004 film by, and I'm going to say this incorrectly, Lucille Hadzihilovic. Hadzihilovic?
Yeah.
Sure.
She directed the movie Innocence, and it is so bonkers and strange and is a very quiet sci-fi film. The only thing you see in the beginning is that there's water rushing, and then there's a casket, a little wooden casket that shows up in an old, beautiful house, and then a bunch of little girls all dressed in the same kind of like white schoolgirl uniform with pigtails. They open up the casket, and there's a new little girl who says, "Where am I? Where's my little brother?" And you're like, "What?" And it's a quiet film, and it's a like kind of an extended metaphor about sexual awakening. It's got a younger Marion Cotillard's in it, playing a ballerina teacher, because all these girls have to take these ballet classes, and you're like, why do they have to take ballet classes? Why are there no boys? Like, what is this thing that they're performing for? Like, you kind of figure it out, but you're seeing these dynamics of these girls just interacting, and it's strange, and there's, you know, jealousy, and there's love, and it's it's a really wonderful movie, and it's hard to find. I think there's like a ripped copy on YouTube if you search for Innocence 2004. Check with your local video store first, because the copy on YouTube, not so great. And also, you should just be frequenting your local video store too. So.
And then please, everyone,
your library
tweet
too.
April what else you discover when you Google Innocence 2004.
I know. Remember that, like, keep Innocence movie and Lucille, and sometimes you can just type in Lucille, but Lucille heads a Hilovich. Yeah.
Type in that.
She also directed a movie called Evolution, which is on Netflix, but I think I already suggested that one.
With Julianne Moore? No, that's a joke. Thank you. That's a joke.
Terrible. So I have two, because I haven't been here for a minute, so I just really want to. One of them is directed by a guy who came up from music video and has helped with OMG Everywhere, which I spoke about earlier, and his name is Carlos Lopez Estrada, and his film is called Blindspotting.
So good.
And it comes out on the 20th. It comes out this weekend. I don't know what today's date is. It comes out this weekend, and it stars and was written by David Diggs, who many people know from Hamilton. He was in the original cast, and Rafael Casal. And who are also in, David was in Clipping, and Carlos did a lot of videos for them. So check those out on YouTube, because they're fantastic. But it's great. It is energetic and ambitious, and it takes on a lot of themes. It is also super easy watchable and fun. Blindspotting, check it out. And the other one I want to recommend, because going off of what we were saying with The Rock, but The Rock is in a film directed by Michael Bay that's my favorite thing he's ever done, called Pain and Gain.
I knew you were going to say that.
And it truly is. It's my favorite The Rock character. Is that a sentence? My favorite The Rock character. I'll throw that extra article in there. It is so ridiculous. He's a coked out, roided out, crazy weightlifter in the 80s. It is so strange and obnoxious. It's really an adventurous film for Michael Bay. But yes, I would also put that out there. Pain and Gain. Get your eyeballs on it.
Morgan, what do you have for us?
I've got two.
I've
got two.
Is
that cool?
No, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The first one will be Paris Blues. Sidney Poitier and Diane Carroll and Paul Newman. They play jazz musicians in Paris, 1961. Beautiful, beautiful people. Sexy jazz music. The score of the soundtrack is incredible. The second one would be Love Jones, 1997.
Oh, boom.
It is a primer in neo-soul. Nia Long is in this film, along with Lawrence Tate. Mm. And the music supervisor was the late, great Pilar McCurry, who passed earlier this year. But it's probably got one of the best soundtracks I've ever heard. I get asked that all the time. As a music supervisor, what's one of your favorite soundtracks, or what's the top 10? And Love Jones is always in the top 10. She absolutely put her foot in that. There are hits after hits. Michelle and Dego Cello, young Lauryn Hill. I mean, my God, you got Cassandra Wilson.
Come on now. Dion Ferris.
Penny Hopeless.
He's
just
never been
hits. So please do check that out. It's just gorgeous. It's young black love. It's spoken word. Lisa Nicole Carson. I could go on and on and on. It's a classic, classic movie that I can't believe is 21 years old.
It's 21 years old?
It is.
No, I can't. Well, that's right. When in Girls Trip, when Lorenz showed up, I was like, how?
Right.
What?
Wait, where?
What cryogenic chamber have you been sleeping in? What's going on? He looked it looked like he popped over a week after Love Jones. Like, just that beautiful, easy grin. Like, oh, forget it.
Isaiah Washington up in that.
Oh, my God.
Isn't Bill Bellamy in that mug,
Bill
too?
Bellamy's
Bill
in
Bellamy
there.
Bill Bellamy in that mug. With that Jelly Jelly song that's on there. I'm telling you, Love Jones, yo. So good.
Hits. Rush Over, Cassandra Wilson.
Oh, yes.
Hits.
Hell yeah. Man, I feel like I was just yelling about Love Jones
like
a couple weeks ago. On
you
this
were,
part.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
It is amazing. And now to say what my staff pick is, I'm going with Die Hard with a Vengeance, y'all.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, you heard me. You heard me. Because I knew we'd be talking about Die Hard so much. And everybody loves Die Hard. And I don't think enough love goes to Die Hard with a Vengeance. People had just kind of checked out at that point, I think, with the Die Hard series. They thought it was kind of dumb that the villain is, spoiler alert, is Hans Gruber's brother. But then when you see Die Hard with a Vengeance, Hans Gruber's brother, Alan Rickman, of course, who would be his brother in the movie world? One of the greatest actors of all time, Jeremy Irons, y'all. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing, y'all. It's amazing. Sam Jackson. And Bruce Willis, I think they were just coming off of Pulp Fiction, and like you see them in a movie. This was like the beginning of their Sam Jackson Bruce Willis trilogy. They had what'd they do? They had fucking Pulp Fiction and Die Hard with a Vengeance, and then Unbreakable. Whoa, yeah. Damn! So, come on, Drea, how dare you?
I'll save that for another time.
Okay. Yeah, probably when we discuss Glass, when that comes out.
Oh, and you know we're going to, and you know I'm going to wear my purple suit, yo.
I better be here for that.
I didn't know you had a purple suit, so I now I definitely know you're going to win.
I do. I don't have a purple cane yet, so that's what I need to work on. Die Hard with a Vengeance. John McTiernan came back to direct that movie. I'm still on this, yo.
He's like, I didn't finish my checklist.
No. Like, it blows up the whole Die Hard kind of like it's his old, it's McClane stuck in one location. They just went, they thought outside the box, which is what I wanted Skyscraper to do. And it's a really fun movie. I'll say it again. Die Hard with a Vengeance, Drea. Oh my God. Talk to that mug. Talk to that mug, please. All right, next week we will be talking about Mamma Mia 2 with Dave. Dave Holmes is going to be in the
nice.
Building. Oh, that's my boy. Dave Holmes will be here. That's going to be a fun show. If you like what you're hearing, hey, leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts, y'all. 5-star reviews get a shout-out on the show. Let's run through a couple of these. I will start off. Good Rum Michael says, after listening to innumerable movie podcasts that amount to Siskel and Ebert wannabes harumphing at each other.
That's a good word.
That is a good word. I mean, he already threw innumerable in there. I have finally found my people with my fellow Michigander, April Wolf, standing firm in the face of false gratitude. Shout out to my DJ, False Gratitude. On weeks when the truth is there's nothing good to go on about, Alonzo Duralde laying out pitch-perfect synopses, Ricky Carmona keeping things light without glossing things over, and everyone going deep on the movies and news under discussion. Who shot ya is appointment. Listening. Good one, Michael. Thank you.
Cinepunk says, this show has me so enamored of their fun and charming host. I find myself catching new movies they cover just so I will be able to engage with the episode better. And big ups to April for choosing Wake in Fright, an all-time classic. April, you've gotten a couple nods for that.
Yeah,
good
people
work.
Have been.
Good work.
People like Wake and Fright. It's a fucked up movie. Welcome to my mind. I guess I'll read Spock Brain 64. That's a great Spock.
That's
Brain.
A great
I read it before I understood what I was saying. Spock Brain 64 says, I am not your normal demographic, being a white middle-aged lady, but as the proud parent of an LGBTQ child, I love the diversity and inclusivity of the show. Also, I love movies, and Ricky, April, Alonzo, and all their guests are intelligent, clever, and quick-witted in all of their reviews. You three have restored my faith in the younger generation, which often appears to us olds to be a bunch of screen-hypnotized zombies. But you guys always have a fresh take on everything from movies to current events that is thoughtful and insightful. And you are all clearly having so much fun that it is impossible to not have fun listening to you. You are always a bright spot in my week, and no matter what else is happening, when I see your show pop up in my feed, I know I'm going to spend some time giggling on my way home from work. Thanks. Well, thank you, Spock Brain, because we don't see age or anything else in our demographic.
We don't have a demographic.
We don't have a demographic. It's essentially whoever you are, you know? Like,
have you heard of movies?
Have you like them?
We like movies.
You like movies?
Yeah.
You're it.
I'll read this last one by Justifiably Brilliant, because I believe they're referring to what I said last week about, I don't know if a film like Sorry to Bother You would hit everyone in Ohio. Justifiably Brilliant says, hey, y'all, I'm a big dummy from the cultural wasteland of Ohio.
That serves you right, man.
I didn't mean it like that,
got
yo.
You.
I didn't mean it like that. They say, they go on to say, I own lots of firearms and know nothing about politics or current events. I'm sure I would never understand any of the ideology or points of view expressed in the film. Sorry to bother you.
Burn!
Someone's getting
burn,
roasted Mickey. As we speak.
You're the one that likes roasts,
I do.
Man.
I'm closing my mouth and taking it. I'm taking it. They also say, I do love everything about this podcast, though. I followed Senor Duralde over from Linoleum Knife and have decided to stay. The three of you entertain me and raise my spirits. That's important here in this hinterland. Much love and good health. Right back at you, yo. Right back at you.
I hope you live near Cedar Point. Like, you get it, right, Ricky? Maybe? I don't know. You ever been to Cedar Point?
No.
All right.
No. Amazing. I was like, I hope you live near Columbus.
No.
I hope you live near Sheboygan.
Well, maybe it's in Columbus. Maybe Columbus or a little bit of Cleveland. But, Cedar Point's a great theme park.
Oh, my God.
Morgan, thank you very much for being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Tell the people where they can hear you, where they can find you online, all that good stuff.
I'm at Radio Morgan Rhodes on Instagram, just Morgan Rhodes on Twitter, the black one, because there's some other Morgan Rhodes. They're not black, though. So it's just me. Heat Rocks is a podcast I do with Maximum Fun. My co-host, Oliver Wang, is very smart and speaks eloquently about music, and it airs on Thursday nights. You can also catch me once a month on KPCC Tuesday Reviews Day. I also want to shout out this really cool mixtape coming out called Hold My Bitch Drea.
Yeah!
I'm going to be on that piece. So do check that out. Don't sleep on that. She's coming with fire. She's got bars. We just meet, and I didn't know she had bars like that until this episode. So, yeah, definitely check for that. And if you have some spare time to Netflix and chill, check out Dear White People Season 1 and 2. Oh, music supervise that thing.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
God damn, yo. Royalty. Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. Shout out to April. Shout out to Drea. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And that's what's up, yo.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.